This is Rabbi Sharon Brous, Rabbi at Ikar, where we're dedicated to reinvigorating Jewish community, ritual, and learning, all while laying the foundation for a just and loving society. You're listening to Ikar's podcast, where you can hear our sermons from Shabbat and holidays, our teachings, our guest speakers, basically anything we think worth hearing that we can capture and stream, you can listen to right here. The whole Megillah. I mean, literally, the whole Megillah. So thank you so much for being with us.
We are so, so blessed to have sisters Danielle and Galit Dardashti with us this evening in conversation with Asaf Elias Shalev. As I shared before, Galit and Danielle are the co-creators of The Nightingale of Iran, a new documentary podcast series, a personal one about your family and this journey of discovery, surprising and emotional six-part series, which has been on the top of all the podcast charts. And so highly recommend that you check it out, and you're certainly going to want to if you haven't already after this conversation. I gotta give you a little bio just because these bios are pretty remarkable. So Danielle is an Emmy Award-winning documentary writer and producer, former on-air TV news reporter, and a story slam champ who's been on the Moth Radio Hour. Co-author of the Jewish Family Fun Book and leads storytelling workshops all over the world. And welcome. And Galit, Dr. Galit Dardashti, renowned vocalist, composer, anthropologist of Mizrahi Jewish culture. In her new award-winning album, she sings with samples of her famed Iranian grandfather, who you'll hear more about tonight. She's currently a fellow at the University of Pennsylvania's Katz Center. Welcome. And our moderator, Asaf Elias Shalev, an LA-based staff writer with the JTA, the Jewish Telegraphic Agency, also a Mizrahi Jew, grew up in the Valley. Is that where most Mizrahi Jews grow up? Okay. And the author of a new book about the Israeli Black Panther movement of the 1970s. Welcome to the three of you, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. This podcast tells a story that just had to be told, both because of the particulars that are just so fascinating. I mean, the story of how your parents met, I mean, that's not even the main story, and that's just incredible. And because of the universal aspect of it, it really asks questions that anyone could get invested in, questions about identity, and about where we come from and who our parents were before we knew them. For me, it gave me a better sense of how I, as a Mizrahi Jew, belong in the American Jewish story. So I really appreciate that. And fortunately for the world, you combined have the perfect skills and sensibilities to tell this story. And I thought my first question would be, how did this project come about? And I do want to ask that, but I also want to know, like, what took you so long to tell this story?
Well, you know, we are busy people, and it took a pandemic to kind of shut us down doing a lot of other things that we've done in our lives and have some time to really think and freak out about existential stuff and where we came from and where we belong. And also, Zoom became a thing, and it became easier to talk to people all over the world. And I think it just happened at this time for so, there were so many different things that kind of came together. Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, what took us so long? Okay, well, you know, I'm an anthropologist by training, and I originally thought that I was going to go to Iran. You know, when I started thinking about grad school, it was a long time ago, and it seemed like Iran was going in this certain direction that it eventually did not go in. It seemed like it was kind of opening up things with Khatami, and I thought I'd be able, as an anthropologist, to go do research in Iran, because I didn't want, as an anthropologist, to do research in the United States. So I applied to graduate school to write about my grandfather. And when I couldn't do that, I kind of changed paths. And so why now? I've been working on this project where I sing with my grandfather. Finally was recording that album. It was the pandemic. But I've been kind of working on, I've kind of been obsessed with my grandfather for a long time, musically, doing things with him musically. But Danielle is the storyteller, so it wasn't until we thought about kind of joining forces that this happened.
Thanks. And what would you say was the most surprising thing or surprising moments in making this project?
Oh my God. There were so many, but one of them was that as we were doing a million Zoom interviews during the pandemic, was kind of amazing. You could talk to anybody anywhere. And we were thinking about who we wanted to interview for this project, and we at first didn't know if it was gonna be a documentary film or what. And I remembered that like 10 years earlier, I met somebody who said, you know, my father was very close to your grandfather. And he said he's still alive and he's young. Like he was like in his 70s young. Like meaning, you know, my grandfather is not.
Which was like our dad's age, not our grandfather's age. So it seems sort of odd
that we were like,
this 70-year-old
dad
was close with our grandfather who was 30 years older than that.
But if you listen to the podcast, you'll know, you know, how that happened. But basically, what was surprising was we had no idea what this was a Muslim man. He said his father, you know, was close with our grandfather. But what we didn't know was when we called this man up, his name is Habib, and we started this Zoom call with him, he took his computer over to his refrigerator.
Ran with his laptop, like to show us during the Zoom toward his refrigerator, toward his kitchen.
And he had a picture of him with our grandfather on his refrigerator.
On his refrigerator, and our grandfather died in 92. So this man has had a picture of our grandfather on his refrigerator, and he's someone we've never heard of, this man. It was a random thing that Galit met his son.
And he started telling us stories, and he cried during our interview.
Five times.
Telling us,
sobbing.
You know, yeah. Yeah, we had to, yeah.
You'll hear it in the podcast. Yeah, so Habib,
that was surprising.
Yeah, and it was one of many very surprising interviews, but maybe the most surprising because we knew nothing about him. And there was this amazing story about our religious Jewish Saba having this very close relationship
with another
religious Muslim whose uncle was the Ayatollah at that time. And they would pray together, facing in different directions, one toward Mecca and one toward Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And they had a very, very special relationship. And Habib was unbelievable.
I mean, he told us so much about our grandfather that we didn't know. I mean, we didn't have a very close, we didn't know our grandfather that well. And so, yeah, it was just, it was a really amazing, eye-opening interview.
Well, and then also at the very end of the interview, there was like an extra bonus surprise where suddenly Habib started singing to us and told us that our grandfather taught him to sing. And sing traditional avaz, Persian music, and that becomes a very interesting turning point in the story for those who've listened to the podcast, because our grandfather never taught our father to sing avaz, and our father was the same age as Habib. And so it becomes this part of the mystery of what was going on in our family.
But the other thing that was very surprising was a discovery that actually Danielle made.
Oh, well, yes. So it just so happens that in the middle of working on this project, my husband and I were living in my parents' house because our kitchen was having work done on it. And my parents were away in Florida, and we were there, and I was doing my laundry in their basement, and stumbled upon this gold mine of audio archives.
But I have to say, we had already decided that we were doing this podcast.
This project as a podcast. We had originally didn't know, but I had applied for a fellowship, which I have some of my cohort from my fellowship year. Marnita and Michael and Robert. Yay! I applied for the Jewish Writers Initiative Digital Storytellers Lab, and I had to call this project something. So I called it a podcast when I applied, because we didn't have video from Iran, and we had some audio, and we had done these interviews with people, and so we figured, we have audio,
music,
but we didn't know that we were going to find a gold mine
in our parents' basement.
In our parents' basement of tapes that had been mailed back and forth between our father came to the U.S. to go to college in 1962 from Tehran, and he and his family mailed audio tapes back and forth, and also not only mailed, but sent them with people who were traveling back and forth from Iran to America. And these are like 3 hour long audio tapes describing everything going on in their lives
like
on both sides
things.
Of the ocean. And so we have hours and hours, hundreds of these audio tapes describing everything going on in their lives over decades. And it's mind-blowing. So as far as surprise, I mean, it was like I was spending the winter in the apartment with my parents as a 20-year-old and a 24. My parents were in their 20s, just married, and my grandparents were, we got to experience a Passover Seder at my grandparents'
in
house in Tehran, and Shabbat dinner in Tehran.
They just recorded sometimes, they recorded their entire
service.
Pesach Seder, you know,
they would
in Iran.
Pass around the tape recorder. They had electronics at the dinner table at their Seder in Tehran in 1962. They were passing around a tape recorder. And it must have been huge because they were reel to reel, these big things. I don't even know. Like, how did they do that? There was like a wire. It was like plugged in.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
Yeah,
that's really
I never
funny.
Thought about that either until just now. But it was like a huge machine. And you can hear everybody being like, speaking in Persian and making a message for my father as they pass the tape recorder around the table.
Because we've never been to Iran. So for us, it was like,
it was crazy. You know. It was crazy.
As a fellow storyteller, I can recognize the first surprise as striking narrative gold. The second surprise, I don't think I'm going to get over that for the rest of my life. I'm never going to forget learning about this discovery you made and just
it was crazy. And so, and I didn't know the extent of it when I first made the discovery because, of course, they're on like these reel-to-reel, right, big, massive things, and so I had no idea what I was going to find on them, but there's like hundreds and hundreds of them. So I'm like, Gali, you got to get over here. And she comes over. And by then, we were already making a podcast. So I was like used to like hitting record when like, so you have like audio of her coming in and me being like, look at this. And it's like, you know, we're like going into the basement. And so you hear that moment in the podcast. And then we get the tapes digitized.
And then we realized it
was unbelievable. I mean, it was truly, we call episode one of the podcast The Time Machine because it really, it felt like that.
So because the stars really aligned in so many instances in the making of this podcast, I have to ask, what have been surprising moments or exciting things since it's come out? What have you discovered in the time since?
I mean, I think for me, the surprising thing has been we get emails and Facebook messages and things
every
single day, dozens from people all over the world who are
Jewish, non-Jewish.
Yeah, not Jewish, not Persian.
In Iran.
In Sweden, literally everywhere who feel like the podcast like moved them in such a way that I'm just sort of, it's kind of mind blowing, but like each person connects with it and this story on a very different level. It's like, you know, one person tells us, sends us a 5-page email about their family's immigration story, and it's like they're connecting with us.
That's what's been very surprising and amazing is that people, when you, this podcast, if you haven't heard it, it's very personal. And so when you are sharing something so personal of yourself, people want to tell you their stories.
They want to tell you their personal story too. And they feel like we get them. It's not only like they get us. It's like they reach out and they're sort of like, you get me. And you understand the feelings that I felt as a new immigrant to the country, or you understand me in other ways, like, because I like had a freak out during the pandemic about like my parents getting old and losing these stories if I didn't do something about it now and recording them. And I've gotten so many emails from people being like, oh my God, I feel the same pressure to tell our family stories before it's too late. So just that's been really surprising, like how people identify with the story on all different levels.
I certainly thought about my own family story a lot and what I can do to learn more about it. Mm. What has it been like for your family having their story told in this way and for the rest of the world to hear it?
Well, first of all, Danielle and I were very nervous about what our dad would think about us telling this story. There were so many parts that we thought might be sensitive and that, oh my God, are we rehashing some of the stuff that he wants to forget? And so we brought him, which episode was it that we
Well,
were,
it was actually, yeah, it was the pilot. One? It was the episode one. We brought him over to my house and we brought my mom and dad both to my house, and Galit and I sat in the living room with the two of them and played them this episode, and the two of us were just like
staring at them. Just like just looking at their every move.
Listen to this thing. I mean, it's not just like sharing. It wasn't just like sharing. It is what Galit said, like sharing their personal stories.
Yeah.
But it was also we're telling his story in a different way than he tells it. And there's like new layers to it.
We weren't sure how he would feel about that.
And like for us to say like, why did our dad leave Iran? We've never understood it. And like he's always told us why he left Iran, but it doesn't really make sense to us. So like we wanted to find out why he really left Iran. And so he listens to episode one and we're staring at the two of them and they're like smiling and they look really engaged and everything. And then it ends and he looks at us and he says, so why did I leave? I can't wait to episode two.
Yeah.
Like there was like a cliffhanger and we were like, well, we haven't made any more of it yet, but we do know and blah, blah, blah. Tell me, why did I leave? And we're like, you'll have to wait to hear episode two.
To hear your own story. Yeah, I mean, we were so surprised at, how excited our dad was to have us tell his story in our own way. I mean, it was amazing to us. That was really...
Well, and now he's, like, listening. He's on, like, his, like, fourth time listening to the series. And I think he's, like, learned why he left Iran. And it's... very interesting to see. I mean, for those of you who've listened to all 6 episodes, you see a change in our father even from episode one to episode 6. And I think he's changed even more since listening to the whole series. You know, when you tell a story for 60 years a certain way, it becomes your story and it becomes the truth.
And you don't question it anymore.
You don't. And it's not that he was telling us, he wasn't intentionally hiding anything.
Right.
It just becomes your story. And, it's more than embellish. Yeah, but embellish is part of it. But it's...
It was, yeah, the things...
It's what you want it to be.
Yeah, how you want to remember, how you want to remember things.
How you want to remember
things. And we all do that in very...
We all do it.
Ways.
And I mean, look, the podcast isn't even necessarily the truth.
Right.
It's the truth that as we see it.
Told.
And it's, you know, everything is so nuanced. And
absolutely.
And even like if everybody in this room listened to the podcast, and if you ask every person in this room, like, why did they leave Iran?
Yeah.
You might
have
get
a different
answer from everybody now, mm-hmm. even after you listen to the whole series.
For all the people who have not yet listened to the podcast, I want a little comparison so people can understand how big of a star your grandfather was in Iran. Like, who would you compare him to in the United States? Like Frank Sinatra? Like, what would be the...
My dad does compare my grandfather to Frank Sinatra.
Oh, that was a total guess.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
But that's actually the level at that time. Because nowadays, people aren't as big of a celebrity as they were back then.
Because there's so many things
competing. Because there's so many celebrities on social media. It's different than who's the celebrity on, you know, it's like,
right.
It's so, like, there's so many channels of, yeah. There used to be just, like, one really, really famous guy.
Well, there was only radio, okay? He was a radio star when there was, like, not TV yet. And so eventually, while he was famous, TV came to Tehran, but he had a weekly spot on the radio where everyone would listen to him. It was like the only thing.
They shut down, like, you know, Muslims closed their shops when his show came on to listen to his show. And it would be like, oh, guys, we're closing in a few minutes because Dadadashti's show is coming on. Hurry up and pick out your shirt, you know. It was
that level.
And where not everybody had a radio. So if there was like a cafe that had a radio, people would come and crowd around the radio to hear his show or come to a place. But people who had a radio in their home, they'd have people over on Wednesdays at, I don't know exactly what time it was. We hear 7 p.m., we hear 8 p.m., but we think it was on Wednesdays. Most people say Wednesdays. But it was Wednesday evenings on the radio. And, yeah, and people would crowd around and listen.
And what has it been like working together? Was your relationship, like, as close as it seems right now before? How has it evolved?
We've always been really close. And we live in the same town.
We live 5 minutes from each other in White Plains, New York.
We're kind of, this project was so intense that we really didn't have time to talk to anyone else.
Ever.
And it would be like...
we were like, this has been very different, like, level of closeness than ever before in every way that you can imagine as far as, like, you know, butting heads and... like fangirling over each other. I mean, like we have a lot of respect for each other, but like it was sort of like bring your sister to work day every day for us.
No,
like,
it was really
amazing.
We never
worked
though.
Together. So like I was like,
I mean, I knew that Danielle was talented, but like working with her on this project, it was kind of, yeah, we were both kind of, yeah,
I was like, Mom, Galit's really smart. Like, yeah, like it was just really, really fun and hard, but like also great because like if you have a fight with a colleague, it becomes like a whole thing. You got to work it out. With us, it's just like, oh, I forgot we're in a fight. It's like, okay, whatever, and then you move on. But it's like, yeah,
we're somehow related.
Yeah,
so
you know,
we move on and
works out. But it was very cool.
It was pretty great.
My brother's here. I hope we get a chance to connect on that level.
Yeah. Well, honestly, it was, you said earlier about like our skill sets being like a really good fit. And we actually didn't quite realize how good of a fit until we were like in the middle of like it coming out, we were just like, shit, this is like so awesome. Like, it was just like, like all of a sudden it was like, she's so good at so many things that I'm not good at, and
she's
I'm
so,
so
good at things. You know, that
it,
I'm
it
not
just was
at.
Like, and we know very different people. Like, she knows a whole lot of people in the academic world, in the Jewish world. I know tons of people in the media world. So it was just kind of
it's
like
a
good mix as far as skills, contacts, you know, all that. So it's cool.
Very cool.
But we also kill each other like a lot. So yeah,
we're both very quiet.
Yeah.
I knew
we don't
her,
have
I
any
knew
opinions
cousin from
about
before,
her.
And, yeah. and she fits into the family yeah. mold. Question for you, Galit. Oh, we were just treated to a display of your talent, and it's not every day that you get to hear a Vaz or Tahrir style singing. Can you tell us what that is and how you learned to sing in this way?
Yeah. So. So if you've heard the podcast, you know, we didn't grow up very Persian. So when I would hear our grandfather singing when I was younger, I mean, it was interesting, but very foreign. I grew up as singing my whole life, but not that style of singing. And when I went to do my field work in Israel, which is where I eventually, I write about Israel and I write about Middle Eastern music in Israel. And I went to do field work on this subject. People said, oh, well, you're Persian. You need to study Persian classical singing. I said, okay. And I found a teacher, and he was so excited to be my teacher because my grandfather was Yunus Dadadeshti. But I couldn't, those sounds, those, you know, that, tahrir, that was not something that could come out of my mouth. I'd studied like Western classical music, and I had no thought that I could sing like that. And then at one point, my teacher said to me, you know, it's like crying. And I have a lot of experience crying. I'm very familiar with that genre. And somehow something clicked for me in like my mind body, and I could immediately do that singing at a level that somehow it is hard for a lot of people to do it. It just clicked for me, and he was like, "Well, yeah, you're Yunus Dadashti's granddaughter." It's a style of singing that you only have in mostly in Iran and maybe, you know, a little bit in Iraq nearby, Afghanistan, but just in that area of the world. And it's, tahrir means release, which I think makes sense when you hear the style. So, and my grandfather was very famous for that style of singing.
Well, we all felt it. We all felt the release. and a question for you, Danielle. It's easy to connect to our personal stories, our family's stories, but I know you make documentaries, you did TV news, so I know because I'm in the news business too, you're thinking also about audience, you're thinking about how this connects to people, and so I'd like to hear from you, from that perspective, why you immediately thought the story was universal and why you thought a lot of people would relate to it.
You know, I actually, I don't know if I realized how universal it was when we started out. It was a story that we really wanted to tell for personal reasons and wanted to have told and that we needed to tell. And I don't know that I realized on the same level as like when I work with a client to help them like tell their story in a way that's gonna impact the world. I don't know that I knew the depth of how much this story, but I guess what I did know is that the more specific a story is and the more personal it is and the more vulnerable you can be as a storyteller, admitting how you feel and who you are, the more universal it is, and which seems counterintuitive in a way, because you think, oh, if it's so specific about this Persian Jewish family that didn't grow up very Persian, who felt out like a fish out of water in, you know, like very, very specific, right, that you think, oh, isn't that going to sort of alienate? But like, everyone feels like an outsider in some way. And everyone's had an experience where they've sort of felt othered in some context. Yeah. And there's a lot of feelings that we deal with in the podcast that really are so universal. But I don't know, to answer your question,
she's
the way you
asked it.
She's
just a really good storyteller, and I don't think she could tell a story that wasn't kind of easy to relate to.
Well, I just released
Thank you. You're not so bad yourself, chick.
You're phenomenal. And I just released a book in which I appear very little, and you certainly have given me courage to try to bring myself out more.
Actually, that was a big challenge for me in the very beginning. I have never told a story. Besides, I have done like moth stories where I get up and I tell a 5-minute story about myself, like at the microphone. But mostly when I've done... Well, 100% when I've done a documentary or anything where I've interviewed other people, it's always been not about me at all, and I'm not a character in the story. And so that was actually an issue in the first draft of the pilot, of the first episode, where everyone that listened to it is like, where are you in this story? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it was like, I'm not hearing any pain. I'm not hearing any, like, what are you searching for? What is the, you know, it was like a little hard to do that. So, yeah, call me when you're,
I will.
Yeah.
I think so much what you're saying is landing with our audience here. So I'd like to take the time now to open it up for questions. I see a hand right there. I think they're going to get you a microphone.
Oh, I want to actually acknowledge somebody who is in our podcast, who is in our audience, Haida Herbert.
Oh, I didn't even see her.
Haida. So Haida tells an amazing story about when she was a little girl. And for those who listen to the podcast, it's like one of these favorite moments for people about her in the summertime, how they used to pull the bed out on the terrace and she and her grandmother are listening to the radio, and the radio's inside and they're sitting out on the terrace and they hear my grandfather on the radio and he's talking about singing with the nightingale. If you remember that moment, that was Haida.
I do remember that.
Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry, my question. Well, first I want to say thank you so much. I have listened to the podcast and I love it. I don't think I've ever heard anything like it. You are such amazing storytellers.
Thank you.
And yes, it really does resonate on a personal level. But I really feel that you have a movement right now. I think you have created a movement, and something even much bigger is going to happen by what you're doing. On a personal level for me, I'm a documentary maker emerging. So one of the things I've been wanting to do is to make a film about my dad, who's a prominent scientist. And it's really difficult. It's really vulnerable because I have to come from behind the camera and come in front. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you is, how do you deal with the sound? Because sound, I mean, you have a podcast, but sound is so sensitive of how good quality it is. And if it's not that good quality, and then you get in trouble. And when you have a moment that's happening and you want to capture it, and how does that happen?
So I'll tell you this. I come from a news background, and we were never precious about how things were recorded back then, and it was in the olden days before digital stuff. But I think today's audience is so used to hearing very authentic, natural stuff on YouTube, like, and hearing like YouTubers who are like in their bedrooms, just like with their phone on a stand, talking to people. I think just like whatever you get, I think stick to one kind of how you're recording the sound. Like all of our sound, like my narration was on a professional microphone, but everything else we shot on either Zoom or our iPhones. Yeah. And it's consistent, so like you're not hearing like it's sounding really professional at one point and then sounding, and if there's a difference between the voice on the narration, yeah, and everything else. We didn't use, and some people in the beginning when we started were like, I had a mentor who was very precious about, like, she came from NPR and she was like, you need to get professional equipment that you, you know, and I was just kind of like, really? It sounds totally fine to me. And so I think it depends what, whatever you do, stick with it. And,
but you don't, yeah.
But I don't think you need to have, I think for like the narration piece, it's good to have a professional microphone. But for like real moments, just hit record on your voice memos, on your, it's like our iPhones are so good and our laptops are even better.
I see a question over here in the front.
I'm curious about your mom. Was she from Persia? Was she from Tehran?
Oh, you haven't heard the podcast.
You haven't heard the podcast.
So I'll tell you, our mom.
You can give it away.
Our mom is a lot of people's favorite character in the podcast.
Yeah, we got lots of fan mail for our mom.
Lots. So yeah, our mom is not from Iran.
She's an Ashkenazi girl from New York, and she is like one of the stars of the podcast. So you're gonna love her.
Hi. I didn't hear the podcast, but now I'm going to, and I really enjoy listening to you. But you had so much information, and I don't know that you can put everything, but was there anything that you decided not to put because it was too much or too private or too personal that decided this is I don't want to put in the podcast?
Yes.
The answer is yes.
Yes.
Next question. No.
Next question? I mean, yes, there's so much. Look, I think there's like a really delicate balance between
being vulnerable and
going to the edge of pushing. You know, for all of you who've heard the podcast, we pushed our dad pretty far to a point, but we were never disrespectful. And it was always a question of, oh, I'm going to start crying. It's always a question of doing something with respect and love, but pushing as hard as you possibly can without being disrespectful and unloving. Always asking yourself, you know, and there were a few moments in some of our conversations where I asked him questions that we recorded that I don't think were 100% respectful, and they're not in the podcast.
Yeah, and we had a lot of conversations about what we thought we should include and what we weren't comfortable sharing. Because, you know, like everything, it's a documentary, but you choose what part of your story you want to share and what part you decide you don't want to share.
And there are moments in the podcast also, for those who haven't heard it, where, like, we love that people tell us that certain parts and very different parts to different people are
cringy.
And we love that.
Yeah.
Because it means that we did push it to the edge.
We hit
on something. Especially Iranians. So the Iranians in the audience, you know exactly what we're talking about. And the Iranians in the audience
Felt it the most.
They felt it the most. Because it's really, I mean, the young documentarian who stood up and said, we're starting a movement, it's overwhelming for us because we don't consider ourselves insiders at all in the Iranian Jewish community. And several people have said that to us.
But that's partly why we were able to kind of look at the Iranian Jewish community in a different way, is because we're kind of insider outsiders and more outsiders than insiders. So So we're talking about issues in the Iranian Jewish community that really haven't been talked about, really not anywhere.
But again, we wanted to do it with respect, but push it to the line where it was not disrespectful, but it was really questioning things in a persistent and straightforward way and interrogating certain things that have just never been really interrogated in that way.
You're real truth tellers.
Yeah, but trying to be respectful also to the community and our family.
I just want to thank you both for doing of what you did. It was an incredible thing that you did. I know for the whole world, but I think especially for the Persian community and especially for the Jewish Persian community, and describing things that really hit home for me. I know I cried a few times listening to it, of, you know, why they would look down on people that are singers or cantors, and really hit home. And it was inspiration for my children that they want to make some kind of documentary just for us, but it was a great inspiration. So,
well, thank you so much. That means a lot. And I really, honestly, like, if we can inspire people to tell their own family stories and just literally hit record on their iPhones and just record the people they love,
that's
like,
a lot.
Honestly, that's a lot.
We have time for one more question. I think I saw your hand up for a while, so.
Hi. In my own journey of reclaiming Mizrahiyut or my Iraqi identity, Galit has been a very important part of that. So just grateful to be here with you. And one of the things I noticed in the podcast and also in my own experience is that there's a lot of like grasping for the past, but there's also a point at which we are like building for the future and kind of taking what we've learned from our families and our lineages and creating something new. And I'm curious about what that, like how that showed up for you in this podcast experience.
How it showed up? I mean, have you heard episode 6?
Yeah. Sorry to keep saying that, but listen to the podcast.
No, I mean, yeah. I think Nadav, probably you know my work. And it's been emotional, you know, to kind of, for us not having grown up Persian much at all, and finding a way to reclaim it has been very exciting, and it's been a very long journey for me. I'm old. what you heard me sing tonight, singing the Iranian Te'amim and Ve'ahavta, like I didn't know how to do that. I didn't learn how to do that until I was 30. And when, you know, I came back from my field work in Israel and connected to Mizrahim in Israel and realized how disconnected I was, really only then kind of doing my field work on identity on Mizrahim in Israel. And I'll tell you, I didn't realize the way in which that research impacted my identity until kind of recently, when I sort of was thinking back at how it evolved.
When I interrogated her about it, yeah.
And I will just tell you, and I'll put Nadav on the spot here, and because he knows this, but you know, he when I talk about 2017 and how there were these young people. In 2017, it was kind of the first time that I wasn't just teaching Mizrahi or Sephardi Mizrahi music to Ashkenazim, that there were these young people that wanted to connect with their heritages, and that was, for me, very exciting. And so I think that actually inspired me in another way to actually record my album, where I sing with my grandfather. And for me also was a really big part of us doing this piece, because there were suddenly these like younger people who it was meaningful for.
And I also will add one more thing to that, that like we've spoken a lot about our parents and our grandparents, but our children, it's been a really interesting and exciting process between me and my young children who are in their 20s doing this because they're very interested, and it's really, I mean, my son actually did some work with me. Like, he did some story editing on the podcast, especially episode 5, which was our hardest episode to write. And you'll hear his name, Uri Sarig, in the credits there. But we, yeah, our kids have been a big part of the process. My kids, because they're old enough to really be involved in it. And it's been unbelievable because, yeah, the whole reclaiming, it's not just us. It's like, yeah, the next generation, too.
Thank you so much. Can we get a round of applause for the Dardashtis?
Can we get a round of applause for Asaf? Woo-hoo!
Woo! Thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
Shabbat
everyone.
Shalom.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Asaf, Khalid, and Danielle. And I want to say, anytime you're back in
this
L.A.,
this is a special place.
Please,
thank you
please
to
come
Ikar
and dine
for
with
hosting
us.
Tonight.
Thank you so much.
Everybody here. Thank
Shabbat
you.
Shalom, everyone. See you tomorrow morning at 9:30 a.m.
Hi, it's Rabbi Brous again. Thank you so much for listening. Want more content like this? I hope you'll subscribe. And please consider making a contribution to Ikar so we can continue to work toward the fulfillment of our mission to reanimate Jewish life, to embody moral courage, to nurture the spirit, and to work to decipher what it means to be a human being in the world today. Visit our website at ikar.org. That's IKAR.org. And I hope to see you, maybe even in person, sometime soon.